Sometimes you want to build something yourself. Sometimes you want to buy it off the shelf. But sometimes you want to get an expert to build it for you right. And that's what Van Clow does. Van Clow builds computers for radio station automation systems and other systems at radio stations. He builds them just right, just for radio. Van, along with Chris Tarr, coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, and welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb from the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. Delighted to be here with you on this Thursday. It's September 15th as we're recording this, but you're welcome to, you know, listen to it or watch it back at a later date, later time, whatever's convenient for you. I'm here in Nashville, Tennessee in the Telos Alliance studio, and really thankful for Telos to give me a little bit of time each week to put this show together and do it and call up my, you know, talk to my best friends here on This Week in Radio Tech and find out a few more things about engineering. It is a gorgeous, almost autumn day here in Nashville. A little bit warm, I guess, up to 84 degrees. And, but just it's wonderful weather here, and it is across a good part of the U.S. Enough from me. Chris Tarr is here, and he's not in his usual, you know, den of engineering in Mukwonago. Chris, where are you coming from today, buddy?
I am in Portage, Wisconsin at our, I guess it would be considered a corporate headquarters. I do have, believe it or not, an official office at a shop, and this is it. Portage is actually centrally located in the state, and I'm about equidistant from every one of our radio stations. So the way it turned out is this morning I had every intention of being at the home office all day, and I got a call that, you know, we've got these new stations we're going to close on in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, at the end of the month here, so 2 weeks. And I need to put up IP radio dishes. And I got a call for the tower climbers going, "Hey, we want to do it tomorrow." So so what I did is I got packed up, I got on the road, and I figured I'd go as far as I could that direction until I got to, you know, whatever one of our facilities was closest, and Portage is it. So we have a few radio stations here, and I try to visit here every once in a while. I've got, you know, a big storage shed full of stuff, and so it works out pretty well. But nice day today, sunny, and 75. So I'll take it. And a good couple of days to be working outside.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad your tower crew is gonna make and get their work done. Hey, well, you know, we can talk about that as we find a few minutes today. But I'm curious to know, when you have a tower crew putting up IP radios, you know, what are you doing on the ground in the meantime? But don't answer yet. I want to bring our guest in, and at some point we'll talk. We've got a few extra things to talk about, just in case our guest doesn't give us the answers that we like. So, and speaking of our guest from, I guess he's in Fayetteville, North Carolina, ladies and gentlemen, it's Van Clow. Van, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. Good to see you.
Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate it. Yep, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Actually, I'm Hope Mills, which is the Fayetteville and Hope Mills are together. And if you need a reference, it's home of the 82nd Airborne. Fort Bragg is here.
Huge. Yeah. And you, Van, yesterday you and I were talking. I said, "Well, now we've got an airborne division just up the road from Nashville." At the base there, it's the 101st that we have. Okay. in Clarksville, Tennessee, at Fort Campbell. That's it, Fort Campbell. So yeah. good deal. Chris, what airborne division do you guys have up there in Wisconsin? You have one?
None.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. Yeah, I said, okay, we have the first. I don't know.
that means they're depending on you, Chris, for protection.
Oh boy, I hope not.
All right. Hey, we're going to jump in the show here. Van, tell me, give me the elevator speech. What are we going to be talking about today? Just couple, three sentences on the topic. What are you going to enlighten us about?
Well, I'm a broadcast engineer like you, have been since early 90s, and then have a second business and morphed into building rack mount computers from a broadcaster's or engineer's perspective. And I incorporated that in, and a friend of mine, Ron Paley, got me into the business, basically almost kicked me into it, but I don't regret it. It's awesome. I build many of rack mount computers for radio stations, automation systems. We're now touching on the latest thing in studios is the video they do, social media video stuff. And so we've actually built a couple of really powerful graphic type machines for that. So,
what I'm curious to learn about in the coming hour from Van and get Chris's input as well is, you know, sure, we as engineers, sometimes it's appropriate to buy off the shelf computers and off the shelf servers. Sometimes that's the exact thing you need. But other times we need a little bit of specialty in what we're trying to do to get excellent reliability, but maybe also have room for an audio card or a video card or some other things that need to go in the computer. So that's some of the things that we're going to be learning about how Van makes the appropriate component choices when he builds PCs and server type platforms for broadcasters. And I should know, my radio group, as well as many, many others, my radio group has purchased quite a few workstations and servers from Van. And I'm curious as to how he makes decisions. It seems like they work out well. They're kind of exactly what I want when I screw it in the rack and it's got all the parts. So anyway, we're going to get to that with Van Clow here in just a couple minutes. Our show is brought to you in part by Nautel. And you know, as usual, top of the show, we mentioned to you that Nautel is continuing their Transmission Talk Tuesday. This is their roundtable discussion that we as engineers get to be part of. Of course, there's a host, that's Jeff Welton, and he typically will have a guest on the show. And there's the blurb about it right there, Transmission Talk Tuesdays. And they got three of them going on this month. The next one is next week on Tuesday, September 20th. Tuesday, September 20th, and the topic is getting ready for winter. So you want to check that out. It's easy to go register. Go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on the Transmission Talk Tuesdays. You can. There's three links on that page right there. So you can register for all three of them if you like. Well, actually, one of them's done already. It happened a couple of days ago. It's easy to fill out the form. So you fill it out once, basically, and the next time you go to the form, most of it auto-populates. So it's easy peasy. They don't bother you with a bunch of emails. They remind you a day in advance, and they remind you an hour in advance, which for me works out great. So check that out from Nautel, nautel.com/webinars. And this coming Tuesday, September 20th, it's getting ready for winter. And Chris mentioned that the temperature already was in the 70s there in Mequonago. Chris, you want to say something?
As I say, they had a great guest this past Tuesday on Tech Talk Tuesday.
Yeah, tell me about it.
It was me.
Yeah, I figured that. I'm sorry I didn't get to attend it. What
it was great. We talked about, and you know, again, one of the great things about Tech Talk Tuesday, we talked about when is it appropriate to replace versus repair equipment.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, there are some engineers that I don't know if they don't know what to do or aren't motivated to fix it, but a lot of engineers I've heard just say, replace this, replace that. And sometimes that is appropriate. Can you give us a line or two about that? Or of course we encourage you to go watch the video of the webinar if you didn't watch it live, but do you have a rule of thumb about that?
Well, the quick answer is it's complicated. And we kind of went into that. There are so many factors, you know, my time, is it, by the time we fix it, have we spent, you know, a good portion of money towards what we could have spent on replacing it? Sometimes it's just, you know, the cost involved with replacement, it just makes sense to just get it over with. So we kind of go into the math in doing that. You know, when does it become, when does it make more sense to just go ahead and buy it versus fixing it based on all of these different situations and all of these different variables?
good advice. In fact, and I'm going to get to Van in a second to add to this conversation, but here, this microphone right here, this is the Sennheiser MKH-416. And if it quit working on me, it's nearly $1,000. I think the list price is about $1,000. If it died, I'm sending it to Sennheiser and they're going to fix it. Even if they charge me to fix it, I want it fixed, because they're not going to charge me $1,000 to fix it. And I like the microphone. However, I just bought this microphone because Van Clow said it was, I like the way it sounded. It was all right. And I paid $32, $33, and I actually ordered it this time. I ordered it 24 hours ago, and Amazon dropped it at my front door about 6 hours ago.
That's funny.
Isn't that amazing? Van, if you could, without jostling it badly, because this mic does make some handling noise, show us the microphone you've got there while I unbox this one.
Yeah, so here you go. Hopefully that not making too much noise. So
it's pretty cool. It's a USB Type-C in the back, and I like the design and little stand. I unboxed mine yesterday after having it for 6 months in a shelf. We have moved our ProRax operation and everything to Hope Mills. We were co-located with Beasley Media Group, and I still take care of their engineering for them. But they basically an arrangement for space in their place, and that went away. They went from a 45,000 square foot building to a 14,000 square foot building. And of course, the 45,000 was like what wasted space. So it was a good move for them. It's excellent facilities, beautiful. And
I'm not going to do a dramatic unboxing here, but at least we'll do the basics here. Let me see. Whoa. Sorry about that. Knocked my camera way, way down. All right, let's try this again and not let the camera go over quite so far. Okay, so here's the box. I just got excited about this. I like, let's call them value microphones, okay? Now, I'm not afraid to spend money on a microphone. I got a Heil PR40. Love that microphone. I've got the Sennheiser MKH-416. Both of those were expensive enough. This guy was under $35 from Amazon. And it's called the HyperX SoloCast. Now, some microphones basically have a sound card in them, and they also have a headphone jack on them. This one does not. This is just a microphone with a USB connection, although it's got a nice box. I've had it out already, but I put it back in. So this comes well protected. Comes with a USB Type-C cable, and it's USB-A to USB Type-C, okay? And look, I'm not highly recommending this for broadcast, but with a little home studio, it might be okay. So here's what it looks like. And, if you watched, Vans had this red light on. So the red light means it's on, and it's got a mute button at the top. It's a touch sensitive mute button. You just barely touch it and it mutes it or unmutes it. And when it's muted, you get a flashing red light here indicating that it's muted. So it's easy to mute and unmute. And let's see what else. Oh, it's got the USB Type-C connector in the back right there. All right. And it comes with this little stand, but if you want to mount it on a regular mic stand, you certainly can. And it comes with the mic hardware, but whatever you call that, mic screw in right there. Adapter. Yeah. But there is no headphone jack. So that's one minus against it. But hey, again, it's cheap. It's cheap and it's inexpensive too. I didn't mean to make this a microphone show. All right. That's not my purpose here. But I did, but I get excited about a $40 microphone that's actually usable. I recorded
a little. Chris is using $1,000 of microphone.
Yeah. Chris, what's your mic there?
This is a Blue Yeti, and it's about $300.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Marcus Brownlee doesn't have to worry about you taking over unboxing videos on the internet. I think he's good.
Did you know Marcus Brownlee was a guest on this show years ago?
I do. Yeah.
I was delighted that he agreed to be on. That was before he had 18 bazillion followers. So All right. Yeah, Marcus does great. Marcus unboxes Teslas, if that's any indication, right? Wow. Okay, we got this little short video. I mean, it's like 35, 40 seconds long, and you can, and I show you about how this microphone works. Suncast, roll it. Okay, check, check, check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm trying out this new microphone. It's the HyperX SoloCast. The HyperX SoloCast. And if I turn away from the microphone, we'll see how it sounds. If I talk right toward the microphone, we'll see how it sounds. And let's see, what if we turn the microphone around so I'm actually talking behind it? We'll see how it sounds from behind. And back on front of it here, and we have a mute button on it. We'll push it again, and we should be unmuted now. So let's see how that sounds. All right, and I just recorded that with a little Chromebook. Yeah, not bad. So, okay. $35, handling noise. So be careful about that. Don't beat it up. Just leave it alone. Set it somewhere quiet. Leave it alone. And I found it sounded just fine. You know, trying to talk about a foot away. So, okay. Enough about the microphone, but, my pre-show discussion with Van, led me to say, that's pretty cool. I'm going to get one of those. All right. Van, we need to jump into our topic here today. You build custom PCs, workstations and server styles for typically for broadcasters, typically to run their automation on, although certainly not limited to that. And we're going to talk about some of the things that go into that. Why would I want to have you build me a PC for an automation system instead of getting one off the shelf? What are some of the best reasons to do that?
Well, like I said, now my years of broadcast engineering incorporated ones, it's like the HP and the Dells and stuff. They're very proprietary, especially Dell. Dell is extremely proprietary, more so than HP. And ours is not. It's non-proprietary. Also, we scale down Windows when we custom these things. We turn off all the frivolous stuff in Windows to make it friendly for broadcasters, for automation. And so we seek out the, you know, depending upon the application, if somebody's running Adobe Audition, we'll add more RAM, or we'll have like an M.2 in there, because Adobe is a pig when it comes to, you know, hogging up disk space and stuff. So processor and everything. So, and, the need for how it all started years ago, Ron Paley, he was with Media Touch at the time. And I asked him, I says, you know, anybody doing rack mounts? Because I like rack mounts as an engineer in the TOC and control room and stuff. I just don't like putting a PC on one of those racks that you buy. And it takes up a lot of room. So, but he comes back a couple of weeks later and says, Clouster, and it says, can you build us a rack mount? And so that was 2000 round two or something. And so it morphed into that. And then CBS New York and everybody else started picking up on it, and basically word of mouth. And that's how we built basically ProRacks.
So, over the years, the styles of computer cases have, varied, varied quite widely. Some styles have kind of hung around. Talk to me about the case itself. I've built up a few computers in cases, and honestly, I don't think I did such a good job. Somehow I picked cases and motherboards that were squeezy tight fit, stuffed in quite, I thought all this stuff was pretty standardized, and yet, I realized, wait a minute, this motherboard has a connector hanging out here, and I've only got, a quarter inch between that and the side of the case. And how did this happen? I've had a rather tough time in building what I thought was a quality build, and it's been years since I've done it. What are the factors that go into your selections for first of all, the case, the housing?
Well, you got what they call ITX, which is a small form factor. And that goes in like in a 1U, 2U. And then you have ATX, full ATX. Let's say someone's running like they still do. They ask sometimes for PCI, legacy cards. They have Digigram, they have ASI, and they don't want to give up their cards. And so we select a motherboard that will actually accommodate their card, but it's restricted to the case. So if they have a full size card, then we said, okay, that's not going to work in like a 1U, but it'll work in a 2U and work in a 3. And again, it's basically what the engineer or IT person who we're working with wants, and the automation requirements, of course. That's how we basically select cases. And you're right, there is so many different, like ATX, there's small ITX, then there's ITX, and there's ATX Mini, and then, yeah, it's, and you have to make sure the cases will accommodate whatever server board or motherboard that you use.
And hey, Chris, feel welcome to jump in here. But one problem that I've actually had in the past few years, like building up a computer or buying a commercial computer for a friend for maybe his recording studio or other production thing, and finding out that the expansion card slots, they're not what I expected anymore. Like it's a little hard to find maybe the slots that you want for an older sound card to go into. And so when you, Van, build up a custom PC, you make sure it's got the expansion slots that people are going to want, right?
Yeah. I asked the client, I interviewed the clients and said, okay, what do you got? Are you planning to reuse some of your cards? And then they'll give me the model number of the card. We research it, see if it's PCI, PCIe times one. Most of like ASI and Digigram are PCIe times one. And so we make sure that's good. A lot of customers, a lot of clients still use COM ports. They have broadcast tools. So we like to have the COM port on the motherboard as opposed to a dongle, because of sometimes the dongles, they'll go to sleep, USB goes to sleep, and then, you know, the automation of miss commands, stuff like that, you'll miss breaks and things like that. And then we have audio over IP, which we can get down to a 1RU with that with no problem. All we have to do is make sure that the 1RU can accommodate a second NIC, because you don't want to run your A over IP audio over your local NIC that you connect with other workstations.
Hey, Chris, you've probably built up some computers. What have been some of your challenges or like me, failures in doing so?
Well, I'll tell you something interesting is we use Symbian in all of our stations. And it turns out that Symbian really likes 32-bit. So we custom build our computers with 32-bit processors, resource, you know, the motherboards and everything else, use a stripped-down version of Windows 7. And we have some Symbian machines that have run over a year without restarting. So, you know, I love the thought of custom building PCs. I do custom loads of software on our streaming machines. I think it's something that's completely worthwhile. And again, the service Van provides with that, I think is great, and I think that a lot of times radio stations make a mistake by going, there's a $500 computer on Tiger Direct, let's snap that up. And and that's, you're going to get burned by that every time. Yeah. So for those of us who can, who know how to build those computers, that's great, but not everybody can do that, and not everybody has the time in a lab to, test the secret sauce stuff like we did with Symbian and found, the right combination of stuff to really make this work. Not everybody has that, the time or the ability to do that. So, a custom built PC is the way to go for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Symbian can be a little challenge too. Unless you really know what you're doing, it'd be a disaster. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first started working with Magnum, I saw Symbians and I went, oh no, I've heard so many bad things. But my coworker Ty is actually a Symbian savant and he knows them very, very well. And we set him up with a license for one at his house, and that's what he does. He's got a lab where he tries different hardware and software combinations, and we found one that was just perfect, and we literally have no issues at all with Symbian. They just run and run and run, and it's become actually very reliable. But it took all that time to figure out, what really works. And some of it is sourcing older hardware. And when, you know, again, Windows 7, which is hard, you know, harder to come by. But then, you know, you get back to making sure that that computer doesn't touch the internet because it's Windows 7. Yes. But you do that. And like I said, we've had no issues at all.
Yeah. Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break. And actually our sponsor for this time is Broadcast Bionics. We're going to, they have that One system. They have some other systems as well. And some of their systems, you know, they say, hey, you can use a generic computer, and maybe you could, but to me, the downside of a generic computer is I'm going to have to make it fit in my rack somehow, put it on a shelf. Every time I go plug a cable in the back, it's going to kind of shove the computer out the front because I'm not smart enough to put rubber feet on it.
We actually build for them. So,
All right.
We build for them through Broadcasters General Store, but we've done quite a few Broadcast Bionics.
Well, we're going to hear from Broadcast Bionics about their Bionic Studio, and they're going to have some more. They had an announcement at IBC. We're going to try to get Dan McQuillan back on to talk about a really amazing thing that they've come out with here in the next few weeks. But right now, we're going to take a quick break here from Broadcast Bionics. We'll be right back with Van Clow on This Week in Radio Tech.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
The Bionic Studio and all the stuff from Broadcast Bionics, pretty cool stuff. And it's always great to hear from the mind of Dan McQuillan. I saw an interview with him from IBC where they're introducing some additional virtual products and some very cool ways to manage those. So and some of the TELUS Alliance virtual products are part of that as well. So good to see that happening. Thanks to Broadcast Bionics at bionic.radio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. Well, hey, it's Chris Tarr and me and Van Clow are all chatting away for an hour here about building computers, custom building computer systems for broadcasters, because we as broadcasters have a little bit different needs. You know, so many places today, you can get by with a pretty cheap, like the $500 Tiger Direct computer that Chris was talking about. That's the kind of computer that I put on the salespeople's desk, right? Because they don't need a whole lot more. In fact, I'd like to get to the day where they're just using a Chromebook, because they don't need much more than internet access. We don't have hardly any apps that they actually have to run. They can do everything they need in a browser. But running the radio station at the moment, we tend to need and want more than that. We need room for cards, for switching video cameras, for bringing audio in and out through some kind of fancy sound card, a number of different functions. And so that's what we're talking to Van about on that topic. Van, a little while ago, I'm going to jump out of order here on the points here. You made a quick reference to something called M.2, and I've heard of this. I thought it was just for laptops, but you say M.2 is a thing for for more powerful computers too. Tell me what that is about.
Yeah, it's the bus speed on a SATA. Like if you buy a Pro Disk Pro SATA SSD, or you buy a consumer, you're going to be limited by the bus speed, which is typically about 560, maybe 600 megabits per second. Now, where M.2 plugs right into the motherboard, it talks directly to the processor, and it's like, 10 times faster. And so in applications that like Adobe Audition, someone's doing production, or video, these video machines that we put out, or vMix. Beasley bought five vMix machines. We integrated it for them. They got the license. We use M.2 because we know that the software is going to page the hard drive continuously, and so it gives it great speed. Of course, they had a rockin' video card and thing that actually dim the lights when you turn the computer on, just about. It's so powerful. But they're running the vMix in their studios, and they like it. So that's what the M.2 is for. Other than that, if you're doing like what Chris is doing, like automation, Symian, MediaTouch, Radio DJB, or something like that, if it's just automation, once it loads, once it installs, it's in memory, and it's no longer paging the hard drive. I'm talking about the OS drive. I'm not talking about your audio. And so a front load SSD, we like to put the drives right up front to where at night someone can pop a drive out. We've had clients, we keep an image of the machines that we send, except for the software. We can't do that. But we keep an image of the OS, and we've overnighted that. They just plug it in and they're back up Windows. I have to do a few updates, and they have to reinstall, of course, their automation system, whatever it be. We try to preload, if they're running ASI or they're running Wheatstone or Axia, we try to preload drivers for them. So it'd be pretty much easier. So there you go.
And so M.2, I keep thinking that M.2 is RAM, but it's not. It's storage. It's like SSD storage. It's big fat storage. It's not spinning hard drive big fat storage, but you can certainly have that an M.2 drive for your OS. Now, speaking of drives, talk to me and Chris about when is it appropriate to use an SSD as your drive, and when is it appropriate to use a spinning hard drive as your drive, and are there any issues with using the other one when you should have used the one? How do you decide?
Well, and it comes down to cost. Like you were talking about the 500. I don't know if you guys remember, of course, Chris certainly, and remember the car machines, of the double packs, the ITCs. We had like two or three sitting on a shelf as spares. They cost what, $3,000 or $4,000? And then some clients like $500 for a computer, keep a spare. But it comes down. See, Chris knows it comes down to cost. Basically, like for instance, an 8 terabyte drive. We had a client, Kevin Hawley, McDonald Broadcasting. They were the company that actually started Muzak, and he's up in Pennsylvania. And he bought two Supermicro servers from us. And now he used 8 terabyte drives, 4 8-terabyte drives, 3 in RAID 5, 1 is a hot spare. And so they're on a budget. And of course, I tried to push them SSD because they're more reliable. But again, it's cost. So the SSDs are getting a lot cheaper. 2 terabyte, 2 or 3 years ago was astronomical. It's now affordable. So that's basically, it's cost is when it comes down to it.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say there was for a long time, the early SSD drives also had an issue where if you wrote to them too many times, they'd wear out faster. And with automation systems, there's a lot of database writing. Now, that has gotten much better. The technology and the drives have gotten much better to where that isn't as much of an issue that, you know, it would probably die a natural death before, you know, it would die from, you know, too many writes to the drive.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a time, Van and Chris, where I recall seeing some memo from one or two different automation companies saying, hey, people are having problem with playing music back from SSDs because they're too fast. Now, I don't know how that affects playback of audio, but they're too fast. Use a spinning hard drive for your media. Now, I haven't heard anything about that for several years now, so I imagine whatever that was, it got solved. But Van, so that's why I asked you, are there any times when, cost aside, is there any time when SSD is not the right technology?
I can't think of anything really.
Okay.
Unless, because again, if we had this conversation 5 years ago, it would come up as cost. But other than that, no, the SSDs, I push the technology. We do RAID SSDs and they're just so reliable. Now we've got computers out there that have spinning hard drives been for 10 years. I've got a client on MediaTouch right now. And I said, you know, Dan, it's about time to change your hard drives. He said, why? I said, they've been spinning for about 10 years. So, they spin at 7,200 RPMs, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, he's a single radio station. So, it's not paging the hard drive continuously. It basically loads everything to a cache way it works. And so, but if you have like four stations, that would probably, probably 5 years, that would be it. So.
What, listen, we've talked about hard drives and SSDs and M.2. What's kind of the state of processors these days? I can't keep track of the i3, i5, i7, i9, and then the model number that comes after that seems to change every year. An i3 or an i5 today ain't the same as an i5 from 5 years ago, right? Well, how do you choose what goes into computers?
Well, we look at for automation, like if you're running like Symbian, you're running MediaTouch or whatever, you just an i5 is appropriate. One client of mine, they like i7, and that's fine. We look at cache in the i7 or i5 processors. We look at cache and Some want an extra video card. We have a client that loves an extra video card because of the graphics. They claim it, moves faster or quicker, whatever. And then some are comfortable with the onboard. It's fine and it works just great. But what broadcasters and those listening to this, if you're thinking about going to Windows 11, don't. It might look pretty and everything, but it's disastrous. Give it a couple of years. Microsoft requires you to have an account to log in. You cannot install the software without having a Microsoft to authenticate on their servers. Okay, so that is a problem. So some automation and stuff, it's like Windows 10. We have a generic admin account. When we ship a computer, we have a default password. It logs in automatically with full credentials, so the client, they can change whatever to the want to. Also, we have the profile. We in Windows 10, we customize a profile to where we like cut out all the frivolous stuff, and if you log in as a different user, it maintains the settings. We found a program of kind of a backdoor. there's hackers out there that that you tell them no you can't and they say yes we can, and so the Windows 7 you can easily manipulate the default user, but in Windows 10 they took it out, so we found a way around that. And that way, if someone creates like in Chris's, like BSI is a user, so it maintains, when he loads BSI, it maintains all the rights, it turns all the frivolous stuff is still turned off. and everything like that. So, but that's just if you don't, if you're considering Windows 11, like Kurt said, for the desktop, you know, for the sales office, for whatever, it's fine. For in the studio, don't do it. not for a couple of years. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, in this conversation, there's a couple things that I have either learned or been reminded of, and I think that it's well to pass these out, because I heard a few years ago that playing media, music media off of an SSD was bad for some automation systems. That's been stuck in my head. So I've always thought, oh, we can't do that. We got to get a spinning hard drive. I should have updated my knowledge. See, that apparently that's not a problem anymore. I haven't heard about that in years. So we as engineers need to apply this to everything. We may have heard, you know, 10 years ago, oh, don't use this processor, this audio processor for that kind of music because they don't go well together. Well, that was somebody's opinion. It may have been true, but surely it's not still true. I'm sure there's lots of things we can think of that we learned and kind of took note of, you know, at some time, and we keep that bias or that prejudice with us unless we update that. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier about SSDs and the writing issue, where you would reduce the life of the drive by too many writes, and that was the case. But they've made improvements over time, and I followed that and. You know, I now know that that's not the case. So, excuse me, you really do, if you're into these things and this is part of your job, you need to follow along. And I do know what you're talking about with the SSD and the automation system. There were a few back in the day where the speed of the file coming off of the SSD was faster than the automation system to process it, and it would get choppy. That certainly was the case. Now, that isn't really the case anymore. It's you owe it to yourself and to your group and to everybody else to stay on top of these things because, you're missing out on some potential upgrades, either being speed or that sort of thing, operational upgrades that you might miss out on because you have this preconceived notion of something not working.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very true. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 610th episode. Van Clough is our guest. He is an expert because he's made a business out of building custom PCs and servers for broadcasters. There's a need for that. And sure, usually it's automation, but it could be other things as well, like in-studio camera, video switching systems, streaming computers. You have a need for a computer that isn't quite filled by something that you get, as Chris said, from Tiger Direct. Nothing against them, but you may need something a bit more custom. Van can do that, and he's kind of filling us in on what his decision making is. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by Broadcast Tools. You know Broadcast Tools. Oh my goodness, they've been around for a long time and have helped you and me solve problems in our radio stations. I first started using Broadcast Tools to change satellite channels on satellite receivers, have the automation or some other timing device tell the Broadcast Tools, hey, it's time to switch, and switch to a different channel on the satellite receiver, back when automation systems had fewer inputs. We don't have that problem anymore, but Broadcast Tools still makes an incredible variety of things that you might need today. And one of those is the Audio Sentinel 4. This is a web-based 4-channel stereo or 8-channel mono silence monitor. And now all four stereo inputs are... Yeah?
I know what? I hate to interrupt. I just bought two of these the other day.
Oh, you did?
I love them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Well, I'll tell you what, tell me about the web interface. I was going to talk about that, but if you've played with them, tell me about how the web thing works.
Oh, yeah. No, the web interface is spectacular. If you've used Broadcast Tools web interfaces, this is very familiar. You're able to arm each channel. You can have a email list of several different people to email for each. So let's say you have program directors for four stations. You can put the four audio of the four stations on there and have each one email a different person. What I like about it is it has SNMP, so I can, do a trap on the SNMP so that my Burk system calls me when there's silence off of any of those channels. There's the web interface. It tells you if the audio is out of phase or in phase. It'll tell you, again, if it drops below. And And here's the other thing I was talking about the other day is I had one of the older silent sensors that just had the trim pot for audio. You kind of had to guess if you were in that sweet spot. This right here, you can log in and tell it exactly how many dB down you want before it alarms. And if you notice, you see those four jacks there, it takes Studio Hubcat 5. So
yeah,
I had an accident node. I literally just had a couple of patch cables and hooked it. It took me 5 minutes to hook this thing up. It's great.
Yes, indeed. So you don't have to get your wire strippers out. You just have to have a Cat 5 patch cable, and you can configure it over the web interface, use it over and have it. And as you said, it has SNMP. So if you're into that wizardry magic called SNMP, then you can use that, or, you know, you can have it alert you other ways too. Like you said, email. Good deal. That is the Audio Sentinel 4. It does four stereos or eight monos or combination thereof. And like you said, Chris, you can have it email different accounts depending on which has silence. So you don't email the hip hop station's program director if there's dead air on the country station, right?
Exactly. Because when it's, you know, it replaced a system where it just dialed any station was off, it just went through a dial list. And this is so much more configurable. And again, I mean, it literally took me 5 minutes to get this thing on and running.
Well, you're just super fast.
No.
This is the Audio Sentinel 4 from Broadcast Tools. If you go to broadcasttools.com, they got a ton of stuff that'll help you build your radio station and keep it operating well. And as Chris pointed out, a lot of their stuff does have Studio Hub compatible connectors on it. So wiring does become easier that way. Of course, it's all available from Broadcasters General Store, BGS. The website is bgs.cc, or you can call them, because you know they like to talk on the phone. They're good folks.
Oh, yes.
At 352.
Great folks.
They are. 352-622-7700. I just got to spend an afternoon with Jessica Shute from Broadcaster General Store last week. We went and visited some folks in Tampa and did an SBE meeting there. So I can tell you, they're good folks. They got sharp pencils. They'll give you a good deal, and they're really good at order tracking. In fact, if you call up and talk to Jessica, and then the next week you say, hey, where's my order? And you call up and you get Jonathan. Well, I know they're brothers and sisters, but guess what? Each of them has access on their computer to the whole order status. Really good communication. Love dealing with those folks. Thanks a lot, Broadcast General Store and Broadcast Tools, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Van Clow is our guest. Van, let's talk about some other aspects, technical aspects of computers that you build up. Let's talk about workstations. My impression is, at least the ones that you've built for me, they're very reliable. They've got the front panel hard drive that you can take hard drives in and out from the front panel. So if you do have a hard drive problem, there you go. Power supplies, the ones I have, seems as though they have just one power supply. Talk to me about reliability and how you, when's it appropriate to put something together that has redundant supplies versus a single supply, a rated system versus a non-rated system. What are some of these reliability or redundancy factors that you factor in?
Well, if we do do a server, we specialize in Supermicro. Supermicro is used in the big tech centers like Google and stuff. All their stuff is Supermicro. And out of all the Supermicros we have built, one has come back. And they're just super, super reliable. If you're doing a server, more than four stations, pulling from it, yeah, we recommend a Supermicro chassis. That has a redundant 800 or 900 watt power supply redundancy. Of course, it can't live in a studio. It's got to live in the TOC. A lot of engineers want them quiet. Well, in the server land, you're not going to get too quiet. You know, we do build a rack mount server. It's called Mini Server. We can load three drives up front. And we can have it quiet, but it doesn't have redundant power supply. So, but it can live in the studio. So, because some radio stations, they just don't have the space. They don't have their TOC is maybe a closet, or their TOC happens to be the main control room. So, you know, we're, and so we, we ask the client what are their needs, and we try to find out, you know, what their, you know, how many stations are pulling from it. And they say, ah, can we do it with just one single workstation and network them all together? And I said, how many workstations are you pulling from? Well, we got four air studios and four productions. I said, no, you can't. You need a robust server, you know. And we try to talk them into maybe a second server, like Kevin up there in Pennsylvania. He did two servers for us and two super micros. And so that's basically what we do. A single radio station, again, depending upon what kind of automation system you're running. And like we can use a simple workstation. We beef it up a little bit, but as a server. And again, budget, everything, it all comes down to budget and need. And sometimes we'll tell a client, like, you know, you can't get away with this. This is, you're going to have problems down the road if you, you know, cheap it out. And so, and I tell them, I always come from a perspective of a broadcast engineer. I've been in engineering since the 80s. I put in major studios, transmitters, everything that you guys have done. So I understand the engineer, I understand the IT, and I understand programming because I used to work in radio, but I couldn't afford to be a star. So I about starved to death, you know, free pizzas and remotes, you know, got old after a while. And then you get married and definitely you can't afford it. But anyway.
Hey, talk to me about one little topic, and that is dynamic fan speed. This allows you to not put a server in the control room, but you can at least put a workstation in the control room typically, can't you?
Yeah. We have what they call, specialized ASUS corporate stable model boards, and they have a cool fan technology in it. Of course, we take out the standard stock fans that come in our rack cases because they're easily cheap, and we put in they have actually a thermistor inside, and all engineers know what I'm talking about. It senses the temperature in the room, but the ASUS board senses the temperature, and of course, if it gets hotter in the room, the fans will spin up. But we're using quiet fans, and you can't hear them unless you got your microphones right next to it. You can hear some muffin noise, but for the most part, they're dead drop quiet. Now the one RU's a little challenging because the getting airflow, but it's still relatively quiet. We tell the client usually to put it away from the microphone, put it down like in a lower place in the rack. Because some's like, oh, we want to one you, but we want it quiet. Well, yeah, we can quiet it down. But one RUs, because your air's restricted and stuff like that. And if you're running the i7, they're going to run hotter. Ooh, and so, so that's, we work with the client and we understand their needs. And so there we go.
Is there any, and I understand the one RU thing, that's kind of challenging. I did have, and we still have it as a backup, an automation playout computer that is one RU, but it's fanless. And so there's no, you know, airflow pushed through it. It's got a big enough heat sink inside and it lets, I guess, a small enough processor. Is there any fanless technology that's worthwhile out there?
Yeah, there is. Again, it depends upon the automations. Like playout one, I believe, is more web-based. And it's almost like a streaming. So it doesn't take much. So you can get away with an i3 and a fanless. It's possible, but, you know, you got to make sure it's in a spacey area to where it's getting air, you know.
Yeah.
Intel uses a product called Intel Nook. And a Nook is more like a rectangular. You can hold it with one hand. Sure. Computer, and you've seen them on an all-in-one monitor. They're usually mounted in the back, and they're great if you're pulling from, let's say, all your audio resides on your servers, your sound cards in your servers or whatever, and your servers are doing the work back in the TOC, and basically the Nook or the One RU is talking to the server. It's not doing the work. It's just commanding a server to deliver audio via over IP or a sound card.
Chris, do you have any experience at your stations with any fanless computers? And I get that that can be a bad compromise if things do get too hot. But it seems like a lot of CPUs these days can be more efficient and can, lend themselves to a fanless design.
I've not run into one yet that's powerful enough that's fanless. I mean, you could do water cooled or something like that. That has its own set of challenges. But I've used a couple of them, again, for low impact stuff like streaming audio where, you're just taking audio and shoving it out the door. Stuff like that. But, I don't know that I'd be ready yet to do a fanless PC for anything that really needs some work because it just, I don't know that it's worth the trade-off. And KVMs are so cheap now that there's no reason you can't stick a PC somewhere else.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay. All right. Hey, Van, some people come to you and they're concerned about the color choices. They want the front of their computers in the rack to have a certain look. How do you as a custom builder accommodate those kind of requests?
Well, when CVS was our client, a guy named Scott Colombo, he was IT, had an engineering slant, but he liked the 3RUs. If you go to our website, iProRacks.com, you'll see it. It's got a blue face on it. It's an and he says, can I get it in other colors? I said, yeah, we can get green. I think we got him green. They don't do the green anymore, but they did red, silver, and blue. I think that's the only three colors they did. So for his Air Studios, it was all red. For his production studios, they were all blue. And for utility machines, they were all silver. So he loved it. And the 2RUs, we can still get them in different colors because of the pandemic that has really limited availability on, how many colors you can get. It's getting better. Supply and demand was really, really challenging for us, but it's starting to, looks like it's starting to pick up again.
One thing I've noticed about the computers that we got from you at my stations, because they are two rack units, or I think the server isn't it four rack units for the server? It looks
the server that you got is four RU because you haven't done the power supply on them.
Gotcha. And my point there is that there's room in there to work. If I need to go in there and move a cable or install another card, let's say I have to replace the second network card. There's room to do that. Whereas, I've got some Dell servers in my workshop back over here. And you want to do something in there, you got to do it their way or the highway. I mean, it's very engineered.
Yeah. Like I said, we're non-proprietary, and that's what has attracted us to other engineers. They don't want to deal with the proprietary stuff, especially Dell. Dell makes good gear, but they are extremely proprietary. HP a little less. When you buy an HP, actually, we have done integration. Or clients, they'll send us over, especially during the pandemic when techs couldn't travel to install, be on site and stuff because travel was restricted. So we basically they'll send us our HPs or whatever, and we'll just strip them down inside. I mean, we'll take off all the HP, everything that HP software is there, we'll take it down, strip it down. And then we'll put it on a KVM, like Chris was talking about. They can access it. And they load like TeamView or something, whatever account they have. And they basically set it up how they want. If they got a server involved, they set up like the whole radio station on our bench. And then we box it up for them and we ship it to where they want it.
Chris, I got one question for you before we take our last break. And that is among your stations, and you're bringing on new stations all the time. You said you're closing on some stations end of the month. Is it important to you to get some homogeneity, to get similar equipment at all your stations, or is it okay to deal with different brands, different models of things, and you just get used to that kind of work? What works for you?
I try to standardize, on everything because we're finding that we can really we can find the right configuration that really works for us for uptime. So, for example, all of our playout machines are custom built, and you know, we have main and backups at each of our stations of those systems. You know, IP codecs, network switches, all of that stuff, because we didn't. When I first took over, we didn't standardize on any of that stuff. And each place was an island, and it was very difficult to remember what we were going to run into when we got to another place. So we very much use the same gear everywhere. And that also allows us to, you know, if something even better comes out, you know, we know that we can deploy it everywhere, and we know what the results are going to be.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's kind of same for my little network of stations. We've got 14 stations, I think, today. But yeah, we try to standardize wherever we can, and you know, we're finally able after years and years, we're finally able to start doing that. Oh, hey, before we go to break, Dave Solomon texted me. Actually, he put a comment on Facebook, and he says, Van talked me through setting up audio processing in North Carolina way back in 1994 when I was just a PD. Great engineer and a great guy. So you definitely have one fan out there.
Thank you, David.
So I told him I'd say hi. So Dave, thanks for your kind compliment. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Angry Audio, and here's Chris Tarr to tell you about it.
Oh boy, I'm excited. If you've been following the Angry Audio posts on Facebook, there is a brand new product coming out. And as a lot of you know, I'm a processing guru. You know, I love working with audio processing. My stations, I like to get a lot of compliments on. And I have some secret sauce that I like to use in each of those stations. But if you are, you know, into that stuff, you realize there's no more Ariannes, there's no more compellers. There really is nothing out there right now in terms of an AGC for pre-processing, either for doing your PPM encoding or even just an AGC in front of your audio processor or in front of the STL. Well, the folks at Angry Audio have come up with something new. It's called the C-Level. And what it is, you know, we've talked about this before with their C4 and C6 audio processors. This is another variation on that, using Cornelius Gold's algorithms in this processor. And I will tell you this, I have one on the air just south of Milwaukee, and it sounds amazing. In fact, we are going to be buying one for every one of our stations. We just love it. And there it is, the C-Level preprocessor. It's very affordable. It sounds great. It's interesting. It's the first one that is really transparent. It sounds big. You know, with the compeller, compeller is a single band box, and it tends to get kind of thin and lifeless sounding if you push it too hard. Ariannes is a great box, but that also colors the audio on purpose. There's an EQ. This box, however, it really is plug and play. You set the density, you set the output level, and you walk away. And it has AI. It kind of learns the music that it's playing. And it adjusts to that. And the consistency from cut to cut is amazing. Now, again, you know, Catfish will tell you this. I was a little hesitant because I looked at this and I went, well, there's no controls on it. You know, how do you tweak it? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I just put it in front of my Omni 11. And it sounds amazing. It really is. So it's coming out soon. They're taking pre-orders now. I think it's another week or two before the box actually gets sold. It's very inexpensive. I believe it's sub $1,000, and it will make any processor sound better. So check it out. It is the C-Level from Angry Audio. Don't get frustrated. Get angry. That's all you got to do.
Thanks, Chris. And also, our show is brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. And here's Gary Morrill to say a nice thing about him.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
I got one right here, too. I can see you right through here. Here's the Max Connect wireless. They use different 4G LTE modems. This one's from Cradle Point, but PepWave also makes one. They have others, too. And this one has two SIM cards in it, so it'll connect to either AT&T or the Verizon network. And again, you get prioritized packet data and a fixed IP address. Max Connect Wireless, check it out. Go to the website, find out if there's a plan that's appropriate for you. Talk to the folks there. You can call them or email them, and you can do like literally hundreds of other broadcasters have done. Get data to where you need it and get it there reliably, either as a main or on a backup basis, just when needed. Thanks a lot, Max Connect Wireless, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, do we have any tips of the week? I'm going to start out with one. If your tower lights are subject to being hit by a rifle bullet from time to time, print you up some of these and hand them out in the neighborhood. Say, guys, don't shoot our lights. Shoot this, okay? You'll get almost as much fun. But if you shoot the lights, we get the FBI involved. And if you shoot this, it's just all fun. So, yeah, I think Torch should start selling these on the website. What do you think? Yeah, the full size.
I like it.
You know, the full size.
I do too. Yeah, that's a good idea. Base jumping off towers.
we don't want that. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, that happened right, when you came down. Yeah. So somebody base jumped right off the tower, and what happened? The wind blew them right back into the tower, and they had somebody from Raleigh come down. They arrested them on the spot. So I mean, that's special.
As a base jumper, you'd think that you would know to pick the side of the tower where the wind is at your back, blowing away from the tower.
You are. To me, you're crazy.
If you were smart, you wouldn't be base jumping off a tower.
Thanks, Chris.
There you go. I don't know. I think it'd be kind of exciting to do, but I ain't going to do it, but it'd be kind of fun if it worked. I jumped off the Stratosphere Tower in Las Vegas without a parachute. Wow.
Okay.
Got video to prove it. And a hole in my wallet too. They took $200 or so from it. Chris, do you have a tip of the week for us?
I do. And it's actually a pretty simple one. And some of these tips sometimes I know a lot of people do, but it's a good reminder. Carry spares of everything kind of consumable with you. I had a situation 2 days ago, or maybe it was yesterday when I did a big tour there. One of my station's translators was off the air, and I went down there, and it turns out that the PoE injector for the IP dish was bad. It went bad. I could have been stuck, but I carry one with me. And so I took it out of the box, plugged it in. We were back on the air, and I immediately ordered another one to have with me.
Yep.
Same thing. I carry a network switch. I carry PoE adapters, especially nowadays with networking. That stuff is, I like to say, consumable. It has a limited shelf life. So you don't want to be out in the middle of nowhere with something like that you have to order if you need one. Anything like that, carry with you or at least have it on a shelf.
And I'll dovetail with that because that's great advice. If you don't have a spare, so you got to order something and just whatever the system it is doesn't work until the new one comes in, order two. That way you'll have a spare. If you had to replace it once, there's a decent chance you'll have to replace it again later on or another one just like it. So
we're actually doing that now because we finally, my coworker and I, my coworker helps you with the IT stuff too. We live kind of in the same area. So we finally rented a storage facility. And so we're now starting to do that. We're order two, we'll carry one in the truck and then we have one on the shelf so that, if we need another one right away, we can go to the storage facility and grab another one.
Gotcha. Good deal. All right, Van, I didn't talk to you about this, but do you have a tip you'd like to pass along to people? Hey, if you're going to take one thing away from this conversation, here's what we'd like you to know.
Oh, Chris, does alligator clips count?
Oh, of course. There's plenty of uses for those.
Okay. I've known some engineers, they kept a processor, went to go actually do a survey for a radio station that they were going to buy, owners were going to buy it. So they wanted me to do basically a on-site survey and stuff. And there was an Orban 8000. You remember those, right? Orban 8000 sitting there, and it had a bunch of alligator clips. And I got close to it, and the engineer said, "Don't get close to it. If one pops off, I don't know where it's going to be." You know, he would keep the processing on by alligator clips.
But, oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, if you're a general manager and you hire a contract engineer, ask him how many fewer alligator clips he has now than when he started the year. And if it's a scary number, that means there's alligator clips out there holding stations on the air. You don't want that contract engineer.
No, you don't. No.
Van, this has been enjoyable. I appreciate you joining us for this episode of This Week in Radio Tech and enlightening us a little bit about computers and you know, helping me dispel some myths or things I learned wrong or learned a few years ago and now have changed for the better. So I appreciate it very much. Oh, your company is called what?
ProRex. ProRex. iProRex.com is website. We got to update the website. It's been a while. We're in the transition of moving and we're just, you know, so the website kind of took a back seat, but, that's, you know, you can get it through, BGS is, and SCMS is, two of our vendors, Radio DJB or even Media Touch. They resell, our hardware. So.
Good deal. All right. We'll put links to your company in the show notes. And thanks for letting us know that there are dealers out there that also that sell your products too. Chris Tarr, great to see you. Please have a safe trip and good luck with the tower crew tomorrow.
Thanks. I probably got another 4 hours of windshield time yet after this. So I got to go hit the road. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Hey, by the way, next week on Thursday, I plan to be out of my office. I plan to be in Mississippi, but we'll have the show as usual. And our guest is going to be the world's tallest remote boy.
Okay. Nice.
he's going to have some stories for us. You know, stories coming from a level of about 6'7". So he'll tell us about the world of remotes from however tall he is. So anyway, yeah. Amazing. He's the one that gave me that tower light right there.
I was wondering, was that real or is that photoshopped in? So
that came off a tower in a little town in Northeast Georgia, and it's in great shape. Wow. And I modified. I took the big lights out, and those are just little some LED bulbs, some Edison style bulbs, A19.
Yeah, nice touch. But anyway, I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Hey, big thanks to Suncast for producing today's show. Really, really appreciate you being there. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We got to go. We'll see you next week. Tell your friends about us and like and click and all that and make us happy and get yourself involved with us. We promise to treat you right. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.